all the dog drama. So we're going to talk, before I get going, I just want to say, I love dogs. I don't want to get any angry emails from y'all. So, and with an intro like that, some of you dog lovers are like, what's he going to say, right? But what we're going to do is we're gonna talk briefly about our experience, our journey with dogs, all the dog drama. And all the dog drama starts a very long time ago. You see, when I was a little one, I was probably 10, 11, 12. I was living in Indiana, and we had this dog, this large black boxer that came to our back porch. We don't know where it came from, just kind of a stray. And we began feeding this stray, and we fed it, and it was our dog. And it was named by my two sisters. My older sister felt like the dog looked like J. Edgar Hoover, and my younger sister really loved Elmo. This is when Elmo was at the height of his Tickle Me powers. And so this dog, this large black boxer, was named Hoover Elmo Scott. And you have the J. Edgar Hoover picture, by the way. This gives context, I think, to what the dog looked like. And and so as quickly as the dog came, the dog left. We don't know where Hoover Elmo ended up. We just know that we loved him deeply for the time that we had him. My second dog was this dog that we appropriately and unfortunately accurately named Deuce. He was a fox wire terrier, and this is not Deuce, so sorry, I must have forgotten one picture. But and the thing about Deuce was I gave Deuce as a gift to my then girlfriend, now wife. Not that she had asked for a dog, she hadn't. Not that she wanted a dog or had time for a puppy. I just thought it was a great gift to give. I've seen people give dogs in movies, and so it was always greeted fondly. And so I was like, hey, I'm going to get her a dog. That seems like a great idea. The thing about this dog was he had this attachment disorder thing, which I'm sure was like doggy post-traumatic stress disorder or something. And I don't really know the inner workings of how dog mental health works. What I do know is whenever we left the house, he peed everywhere. And so much so that we'd put a gate up so that he couldn't go into where the carpet was. He had to stay in the kitchen. And you know what the Deuce would do? He would pee through the gate onto the living room carpet. Okay, Deuce, I got you. I see you. We're going to put some plastic up in the gate so you can't do that. And so we'd come back, and he would have climbed his way over the gate so he could pee on the carpet while we're gone. So then we put two gates up in the kitchen, between the doorway between our kitchen and our living room. And I came home one time, and he's 5 feet in the air looking at me like, oh, I'm so glad to have you home again. Where were you? I missed you. I'm like, how are you? Why are you climbing two baby gates? So what happened with Deuce was we gave him to a family that, we were married when we had him, and we were just coming and going. We both had jobs. It wasn't a great fit, us and Deuce. So we gave him to a stay-at-home mom with kids, and it was a much better home for Deuce. It was the dog and the fit was better. And then came Fergie. That's the black pug you saw a few moments ago. Fergie was a great dog for the time that we had her. And we got Fergie from Craigslist, I think. Craigslist? Yeah. Craigslist or something. And we had Fergie for a week. And, little Fergalicious. I mean, we liked Fergie. Then Fergie's old owner changed her mind. Was like, oh, we miss Fergie so much in the house. And yes, we don't have time, but we'll make time for Fergie. I'm like, fine, you can have little Fergalicious back here. So then, there's several more and thens. And then we got Ava and Jack-Jack. Now this is, you'll see them, there you go, there's Ava and Jack-Jack. Ava's on your right, Jack-Jack's on your left, you have a Cocker Spaniel and a toy Shih Tzu. That is a thing. Did you guys know they had toy Shih Tzus? This is what this is. And a lot of the similar problems. So Ava was a great dog, such a great dog. She didn't like kids too much. She didn't get along with kids. She would snap at kids. Not a problem, because when we got her, we didn't have kids. The thing about Jack is Jack refused to go to the bathroom anywhere but carpet. Refused. And he was a Shih Tzu. I'm not going to go any further into that. I'll get emails about that too. But I'm just going to say Jack, man. And so one time we got vigilant with Jack. We got vigilant. And we were going to get to the point where you are not going to pee and poop in our carpet anymore. You're going to go outside, Jack. We're going to win this battle. And our neighbor left their back door open. And so Jack used the restroom in their living room. Like, we're so sorry. We're so sorry. I don't know why he has this thing. But then both of them, we got Kemley, and, you know, we adopted Kemley. And it was just like, both of them would like snap at him and try and bite him. And so we gave them to families without children who like their kids had grown and flown, and both of them went to better homes. Actually, Ava, like the Cocker Spaniel, like they brought Ava and her next owners would get like sketches, like profile sketches of, because she was adored. I mean, it was a much better home for Ava, like no kids. It was such a better fit. Then came Milton. That's Milton. And Milton was one of those designer dogs, you know, a golden doodle. And so we went and we met Milton. By the way, are you guys like, oh my goodness gracious, how many dogs have these people had? Yes, I know. This is Milton. We went and visited Milton. It was going to be a good fit. It was going to be great. It was going to be awesome. I met him, and then I went away on like a week-long mission trip because I was a youth pastor at the time. And they went and picked up Milton while I was gone. By the time I came back, Milton had established who was allowed in the home, and I did not make the list. So anytime I walked in the house, anytime I walked in the room, like Milton was like, no, I'm alpha. You are not allowed. You are not invited. You may not be here. I was like, Milton, you know me. He's like, I don't know you. You can't be here. Go anywhere else. So Milton went somewhere else. And then came Bella. What? I feel like you guys are judging me now. I'm feeling a really judgmental vibe. That's next week. I will remember this. No, I'm just kidding. This is the last one. This is the last one. Stay with me. This is Bella. And Bella, we had for how many years? A long time. 3 years. 3 years. And honestly, so what had happened was Bella was great. Bella, it sounded like Bella was snoring when she wasn't even sleeping. It's one of those dogs. If you're familiar with these dogs, you're like, oh, do you need one of those like masks while you're sleeping? No, you're awake right now. Okay, I'm so sorry. Bella, you know, honestly, like at this point, we had Harper, and I've talked about Harper before. At this point in Harper's life, she was a runner. We kind of lost her all the time. And Macy was a newborn, and we just did not have the bandwidth. And we'd always give Bella to this one family when he'd go away for a week or whatever. And that family was like, hey, you guys look stressed. Can we take Bella off your hands like permanently? And we're like, no. Yes. Yes. You can. It's not that we don't love Bella. She's a great dog. She doesn't have any other problems. But, you know, we love her, but just we have so much going on, so many, you know, a two-year-old and a newborn, like, yes, you may take Bella. And you're like, at this point, you're like, what, is there a point to all this, Jake? No, there's not. I just want to get that off my chest. No, there's a point. There's a point. I promise there's a point. Honestly, like, sometimes in life, things seem better in theory than they are in reality. Right, we want something. We desperately want something. We want to be someone. We want to have accomplished something. And it's a great idea in theory, but when we get it, we don't like it as much as we thought we would. Or we still want to be that person. We just don't want the process of becoming that person. Like, we love the idea of something, but the actual sort of like tangible, functional, that thing, it's like either we get it and we don't like it, or we begin the process of becoming that, and we think the process, it isn't worth it. And so often in life, what happens is we begin the journey, the process of becoming something, and we fail once or twice and we quit the process. Or we get the thing we wanted and we realize it's not as good as we thought it was. And here's the thing. Everyone has someone they want to be. Very few people want the process of becoming that person. They just want to be that person. It's like better in theory. The process, the idea of being that person is better in theory than the process of actually becoming that person. No one wants the discipline to be that person. No one wants the process of becoming that person. We just want to be that person. We want the idea of that thing. I know this is true because they still make dumb exercise equipment. You've probably seen commercials. Like when I was growing up, my sister had this thing. Have you seen this thing? She had this. They still make this. They still make this. You can still order a Thighmaster today. For us, it was like a G.I. Joe catapult. You know, I don't know if you, my brother and I. You know why I know people like the idea of being something more than like the process of becoming something? Because they still sell this thing. The electronic belt thing. Like, if here's what's going to happen. I'm going to put a belt on, and every second it's going to shock me, and I'm just going to wear it around the house, and then eventually I'll have six-pack abs. No, it's not how it works. That's not how it works. You don't just get to want, you don't just get to like be that person. There's whatever that is, whatever that journey is, whoever that person is that you want to be, there's a process. And we like the idea more than we like the process. What I'm going to give you today, what Paul has in Philippians 4, 8 through 9, it's a process. It's not a silver bullet. You're not going to read these verses and be this thing. But what he does is he gives us a process to become something. And if you follow this process, you will become. So in that way, it is a silver bullet. Like if you follow this process, it will work for you. But it's not going to happen overnight. It can't just be something you think of and you want. You have to trust the process. You have to do the work. It's not going to be like the electronic belt where just, oh, you put it on and suddenly you're different. It's Philippians 4, chapter 8 through 9. And if you follow these verses, that person you feel like God has called you to be, if you follow and you apply these verses, over time, you will become that person. But it won't happen overnight, and it will be a process. It says this, and now, dear brothers and sisters, one final thing. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Keep putting into practice all you learned and received from me, everything you heard from me and saw me doing. Then the God of peace will be with you. So what you have is he gives you a process. He gives you a step-by-step sort of do this, and when you drop the ball, it's okay. Like when you fail, don't worry, don't stress out of it, just keep doing it, keep plugging it in, keep going, don't lose heart. Don't just want to be a person, but embrace the process of becoming that person. Take these steps. And so we're going to break it down phrase by phrase. The first phrase is fix your thoughts. This is the first phrase that we're going to sort of break down. This is a little phrase here. It's like a phrase that they would have had. It's like a nomenclature, or it's like a phrase they would have used. And it means anchor to what is real. Like this phrase, fix your thoughts, it means anchor to what is real. You know, that if I go into Chipotle to buy a burrito, I get my wallet out, and I see I have $9. That's enough for a burrito. It's not enough for a burrito and a soda. And so I make a choice based on what is true. All right? So like I have enough for a burrito, not a burrito and a soda. I'm going to get just a burrito. I'm going to look at what is real and base my choices on what is real. I'm going to anchor to what is real. And this here, he says, fix your thoughts. Anchor to what is real. He says, anchor to based on experience, what you know is dependable and real and you can live on and you can make choices based on. And this is the portion of this passage that makes it not the power of positive thinking. And I read a lot of sort of like commentaries and books when I put these things together, and I watch other pastors speak on this, and oftentimes it feels a lot like the power of positive thinking. It's just like, all right, if you think positively, then, you know, good things are going to happen. If you send out good vibes into the world, and a lot of people take this verse and they're like, it's basically God's power of positive thinking. But it's more than that. And this is the part that it takes it beyond just that. You see, he's asking you to anchor to what is dependable and what is real and what is true and what you've experienced to be true. He's saying, fix your thoughts, anchor your thoughts, anchor your life to something real. But the thing is, like we talked about this last week, we get so caught up in our past and so caught up in our future, and we think our past defines us, and we think our life begins someday down the road, that we lose sight of what is real. We lose sight of what is dependable. We lose sight of what we can anchor to. And so if we're going to start from the place of anchoring ourselves to something dependable and real and foundational, you have to get that anchor point from God. You know, last week we said, don't worry about anything, but instead pray about everything. And you have to have that portion before you have this, fix your thoughts. Because you can't fix your thoughts to what is dependable and real until you give up worrying and controlling everything and you depend on God. And then once you have from God and you walk with God, then you can say, all right, God, what is real of me? What is true for me? What do I need to rely on and depend on and anchor to? And then he gives you that. And so this is the supernatural part. This is the part where you're dependent on God. This is the part where you, this is not just power of positive thinking. It's the power of thinking what God says is true of you. You know, Philippians 2:12 says it this way. It says, work hard to show the results of your salvation. And it's funny because this is one of those hard verses to explain. Like I thought the work was Jesus's. I thought Jesus paid the cost. I thought Jesus paid it all. Like, what is my work? Like, what do I have to do? Like, what is my work in this equation? If is it my work or is it Jesus's work? And really what he's saying here is he's saying the salvation, it came from Jesus. Like, you have to walk with him and be defined by him and be dependent on him. And it is your work. The part that is your work in this is to constantly anchor yourself on what he says. And as you go through life, don't believe lies, don't believe untruths, but always say, all right, Jesus, what are you saying is true of me? What are you saying is real of me? Let me anchor to that. Let me fix to that. Let me not believe untruth. And it's so easy to begin to believe lies. This is why you have to depend on him. This is like the part where it's supernatural. It's not just power of positive thinking. It's thinking what God says is true of you. And so he says, fix your thoughts, anchor yourself to something that is dependable. And then he says what you should anchor to. He says, this is what you should think. This is what you should fix your thoughts to. And he gives this list. And you're going to see the list right here. He says, fix your thoughts, anchor to things that are true. Anchor yourself to the honorable. Anchor to the right. Anchor yourself to pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Honestly, like, you know me, if you've been here at all, like, you know that I love, like, taking words and, like, unpackaging them into, like, beautiful meanings. And the thing about these words is they're all about right. Like, I'm not really going to be able to unpackage these in ways that, you know, because when he says true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable, excellent and worthy of praise, that's what he means. Like, those are pretty good. Those are pretty accurate. Those are pretty... I can't really unpackage those in big and meaningful and poetic ways. He's actually saying that. He's saying, when you approach life, what is your anchor point? What are you anchoring to? Are you anchoring to truth? Are you anchoring to pure? Are you anchoring to right? The one thing that I would say, the one I'll sort of like, I'll dive into a little bit is the word admirable there, that last one, admirable. And that's this word euphemos, which is the same root word we get like a euphemism, you know? And it's, and you know, euphemism is like something that's sort of like neutral, but it has like a connotation to it that's kind of like, that's a euphemism for, you know, it's like a, you know, wink, wink word. It's like this, but it's really this. Well, euphemos is the opposite. It's everyday, it's normal, it's regular, but it doesn't call you to like something questionable. It calls you to something holy. It calls you something more. It calls you something beautiful. It's like an everyday thing that's pregnant and loaded with eternal value. I'm like, that's one word that's pretty good. And the rest are kind of like what you see on the screen. But admirable, that's a pretty beautiful one. What I love about this list is it takes up all the space in the room. It doesn't leave room for other stuff. It doesn't leave room for the opposite. Like, if you're going to anchor your life and your mind to something, then it takes up all the space in the room. You have to anchor yourself to this. It leaves no room for anything else. If you anchor yourself to this, it doesn't leave room for false or dishonorable or wrong or defiled or ugly or euphemism or shoddy or worthy of criticism. Like you only anchor yourself to these things. And so he says, fix your thoughts, anchor your life to that, to this list here. You know, Philippians 2:12 says, take every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ Jesus. Every thought. This is two chapters earlier. And as we think about the things that we anchor our life to, and I want you to take a few moments. Like, what are the thoughts that you think most regularly? Depending on how you define thoughts, some people say that you have somewhere in the range of like 20 or 30,000 thoughts a day, but they're kind of using the word thought there loosely. But you'll see studies there that say that 90% of our thoughts are negative. I can't, I won't, I'll never. And is that what you're anchoring your thoughts to? And if you anchor yourself to this, if you fix your mind on these things, then there's no room for those 90%. I can never be. I will never accomplish. I will never be, there's a person that I admire and I'll never be that. There's no room for that. Because you fixed your thoughts on these things. You've anchored yourself to what you've experienced to be true. And the thing is, like if you fix your thoughts to things and you regularly believe that you can't and you won't and you'll never, do you realize that what you're doing is you're saying that your brokenness is more powerful than God's ability to heal you. Like you're saying your brokenness is stronger than God's ability to change you and grow you. Because he's saying, if you do this, if you fix your thoughts, if you fix your thoughts on these things, you'll become something new. You say, I can't ever become new. Oh, so you're saying that your brokenness is stronger than God? That's a pretty bold statement. He says, fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about these things that are excellent and worthy of praise. And the next phrase he says, keep putting into practice. We talking about practice? Right? Keep putting into practice. Like five of you will get that. That's an Allen Iverson reference. And what's funny is about practice is our understanding of practice has grown and changed even the last few years. Like we used to understand practice and think of muscle memory. Like we thought that practice was muscle memory. That if I do something over and over and over again, my muscles get used to that thing and my muscles gain a memory to them. So whether it's you want to be a great quilter or you want to perform surgery or you want to shoot free throws or you anything. Like we thought that practice was muscle memory. And in the last few years, we've learned something new, that practice isn't muscle memory. It's two things. The first thing that practice does is it thickens the myelin sheath around your axon membrane, your neural pathways. This is a picture of a myelin sheath around an axon neural pathway. And what happens when you practice something is, let's say I want to quilt something, right? This is not very accurate, you know, but let's say I want to become a great quilter. And what happens is my brain talks to my hands and my arms and my core as I'm quilting. I don't know, is this how you quilt? I'm not super sure. The quilters are like, terrible quilt. What happens though is my brain talks to my hands and my arms as I'm. Is this better? Is this quilting? Okay, this is quilting. And as I do this motion more and more, as my brain tells my hand to do this motion more and more, like that command is going from my brain to my hands through my neural pathways, my axons. And as I do this more and more and more, the myelin sheath around my axon gets thicker and thicker and thicker. And what happens there is as the myelin sheath around your axon gets thicker and thicker and thicker, your axon is able to deliver the message more clearly and more efficiently and more accurately. And so what's happening when you're practicing, you practice something over and over and over again, is you're thickening the myelin sheath around your axon, so that your hands can do more accurately what your brain is telling it to do, whether it's this or this or this or anything. And so your axon, it takes your axon from like a dirt road to like a major highway, and it can deliver that message very, very clearly. The other thing that happens is you begin to form new synapses in your brain. And like you have the part of your brain that remembers the last time you made a quilt, and the part of your brain that remembers what you want this quilt to look like, and the part of your brain that remembers, all right, the last time I held a needle, it held it this way and it turned out well. And you begin to form these new synapses in your brain, and your brain works more efficiently. So your brain works more efficiently with itself, and your brain works more efficiently with your hands, and that's what practice does. Now, wait for it. Don't run ahead of me yet. So what you have is this is what practice does. And this is what practice, he says, fix your thoughts on this list, on what is real and true and right. And then put into practice. And he means practice. And the thing is about practicing, like let's say if I try to make a quilt today, you all saw it. I'd make a terrible quilt. It'd be like these big motions, and it would be terrible. Because you wouldn't expect me to make a good quilt. I've never quilted before. If I made a good quilt, that'd be insane. That'd be amazing. You don't expect me to succeed because I've never done it before. But the thing about becoming a person that you feel like God has called you to, or fixing your thoughts on these what is good and right and pure, is when we fail the first time at quilting, we're like, oh, I've never done this before. That's okay. Try again. When we fail at aligning ourselves with who God has made us to be, for some reason, we think, oh, I'm broken. How could I ever? I'll never be that. And what happens is you only fail at practice is when you fail the first time, you quit. So don't fail your failures. Right? If you're trying to fix your mind at what is pure and right, why do you expect yourself to get it right the first time? There's this whole process that happens from practicing, you know, the myelin sheath and the synapses, and there's like a process behind this whole thing. And he's saying, man, this practice means practice. He says, fix your thoughts on what is right and true and honorable and pure. And you know what's going to happen when you first try and do this? You're going to fail. But don't fail your failure. Trust the process of practice. And there's this funny thing that happens. Actually, so we've learned that if I sit here and I know how to quilt well, but I'm bad at it, and I think about what it looks like and feels like to quilt well, it thickens my myelin sheath and creates new synapses the exact same way that it would if I was actually quilting. And they've actually tested this. If you think slowly and methodically about shooting free throws in the right form, or if you practice free throws badly, you actually practice, you get better from thinking about it than you do from actually practicing badly. Which is crazy, because that's like new stuff. That's like new stuff we're learning about the human brain. And that's exactly what he said thousands of years ago. He says, fix your thoughts. He says, fix your thoughts on these things. Fix your thoughts on what is true. He doesn't start with go and do and try. He says, number one, fix your thoughts. After you fix your thoughts, man, practice. You're going to fail. Don't fail your failure, but trust the process of practice. Like these things that we're just now learning about neurosciences, this is exactly what he said thousands of years ago. If you want to be this particular person, if you feel like God has called you to be something and do something, if you see someone you admire, you feel like, yes, God, I feel like you've called me to be like that. Fix your thoughts on what it takes to become that. Think about that. Process through that. And then practice it. Take steps towards it. If you want to be someone who is generous, take steps towards generosity. You know what's going to happen the next day? You're going to feel like not being generous. But don't fail your failure. Put it into practice. Think about it. If you want to be someone who, I don't know, like who others depend on, who listens, who invests in the lives of others, and you do it once, but then someone asks you to meet and you don't do it because, oh, I'm so busy. And fix your thoughts on what you believe is right and true and pure and God says about you. And then practice that. And if you fail the first time, keep going. Don't fail your failure, but trust the process of practice. See, this is how people grow. This is how people change. This is how God changes people. This is why it says, work out your own salvation. Because this is where, like, God gives you the power, and God gives you the direction, and God gives you the clarity. And then it's your job to sort of move and act and fix your thoughts and put it into practice and not quit and not fail. For some reason, we think every area of life is going to take practice except for our walk with God. But it does. It takes practice. He says, keep putting into practice. So the quality and clarity of your thoughts will determine the life you live. This isn't the power of positive thinking. It is the power of thinking what God says is true of you. This isn't you sending out good vibes. It is you believing to be true what God says he wants from you. Romans 12:2 says it this way. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. How incredible is that? That the stuff that we're learning about the way the brain works now is so perfectly in alignment with what God said and how God said you would be changing. Change into a new person by changing the way you think. And the last bit is this. He says, in the last portion of the Philippians passage is this. He says, and all you have learned and received from me, everything you have heard from me and saw me doing. And this is what he's, so he says this. He says, fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about these things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Keep putting into practice all the things you have learned from me and received from me, everything you have heard from me and saw me doing. And this is like the next level of this, because this is good leadership. He says, all you have learned and received from me, everything you have heard from me. This is by a guy named Paul, and this is to a church at Philippi. It's called the Philippians. And Paul was there with the church at Philippi for a couple of years, and he planted this church, and he led them into how to begin this church, and he taught them. And so this is what he's referencing when he was actually with them. And the first three things he says, like, that's good, that's okay, that's awesome. He says, I taught you things, you learned things from me, you received things from me. But this fourth thing he says, it's like next level. He says, it's not just what you heard from me, it's not just what you received from me. Also, put into practice that which you saw me doing. Because he knows that leading by example isn't the best way to lead, it's the only way to lead. If it's not true enough for you, it's not true enough for me. And the thing about Paul is Paul wasn't always Paul. Before Paul was Paul, Paul was Saul. And when Paul was Saul, Paul was this guy who was tasked with finding, persecuting, torturing, and killing Christians. But then Saul quite literally met Jesus on the road to Damascus. And it changed his life forever. And it changed his name forever. And it changed the trajectory of his life forever. And so Saul became Paul, and this murderous, bitter, angry man became this generous, loving, leading man. And by the time he got to Philippi, he says, don't just listen to my words, but model your life after my life. And the crazy thing about that is the journey that Saul took to being Paul. Like, if Saul can go from that life, bitter and angry and violent, to this life, generous and missional and living his life on purpose and defined by God, by doing these things, by fixing his thoughts, by putting into practice, by not failing his failure, but trusting the process of practice, he can make that kind of change. How much more so can you? Like, whatever that is for you, whoever you feel like God is calling you to be, or what the type of father on Father's Day that you feel like God is calling you to be, but I'll never be that. Like, I wish I could be. It'd be nice if I was, but I'll never. If Saul can become Paul, and they go from there to there by doing this, how much more can you be the person God has called you to be? I'm guessing you're not murdering and torturing people. And you're probably not going to go around writing the Bible and starting a lot of churches either. So your journey is smaller than his. And so if he went on that journey using this, of fixing his thoughts and putting into practice and not failing his failure, but trusting the process of practice and saying, God, I am dependent on you. You tell me who I am. You tell me who I should be. You tell me who I should base my life on, and I'll do it, and I'll practice that, and I'll fix my thoughts to that, and I'll think on that. Don't just like the idea of being someone. Become that person. And this is how. So you won't be that person by tomorrow. You won't be that person by this time next week. You'll have probably failed 6 or 7 days out of the next 7. But don't fail your failure. Keep fixing your thoughts. Keep aiming at who God has called you to be. And you will become that person. Don't just like the idea of it. Be it. This is not the power of positive thinking. This is the power of aligning yourself and thinking what God says of you and what he says is true of you and what he says can be true of you. So live dependent on him. Fix your thoughts on what he says is true of you and trust the process of practice. Let's pray. God, I am so thankful that your word is not just theological or philosophical, but it is functional. And yes, that we have to think certain things are true before we have to have the orthodoxy before the orthopraxy. We have to have right thinking before we have right living. But you give us both, God, and I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that your word, it walks us through life change. It walks us through aligning ourselves with who you've called us to be through giving ourselves over to you. God, all of us have these little areas of our life that are far from where they should be. And this is why we find our way back to you. We find our way back to you in all these little areas of our life. And this is how we find our way back. We fix our thoughts to what you say is true of us. And then we put it into practice. And so God, as we go through this, walk with us, show us what is true, show us what is foundational, what we can anchor to. Show us who you call us to be and want us to be. And then remind us that when we fail, it's part of practice. God, I believe that each and every one of us in here has a direction, someone, something, attributes, things that you are calling us to, things that you say can be true of us, that we're working towards. So God, I ask you to give us the strength and the wisdom to remind us of who you're calling us to be. To remind us that who you say we are, so that when we fail, we don't think that failure defines us. God, we are not defined by practicing and dropping the ball. We're defined by who you say we are. And so we can't practice until we are fixed. And we're not going to succeed the first time. So encourage us. Bless the process. Bless the journey. Walk with us as we walk towards who you are calling us to be. And so we thank you for that. In your name, amen.